treating a brother despitefully and fall as directly under the condemnation of this text as the grossest habits of uncharitableness. And the reason why we are always to apprehend great guilt and call ourselves to a strict repentance for these hasty expressions of anger and contempt is this. Because they seldom are what they seem to be, that is, mere starts of temper that were occasioned purely by surprise or accident, but are much more our own proper acts than we generally imagine. A man says a great many bitter things. He presently forgives himself because he supposes it was only the suddenness of the occasion or something accidental that carried him so far beyond himself. But he should consider that perhaps the accident or surprise was not the occasion of his angry expressions, but might only be the occasion of his angry temper showing itself. Now, as this is, generally speaking, the case, as all haughty, angry language generally proceeds from some secret habits of pride in the heart, so people that are subject to it, though only now and then as accidents happen, have great reason to repent of more than their present behavior, to charge themselves with greater guilt than accidental passion, and to bring themselves to such penance and mortification as is proper to destroy habits of a haughty spirit. And this may be the reason why the text looks no farther than the outward language, why it only says, "Whosoever shall say, thou fool," because few can proceed so far as to the accidental use of haughty, disdainful language, but they whose hearts are more or less possessed with habits and settled tempers of pride and haughtiness. But to return, intercession is not only the best arbitrator of all differences, the best promoter of true friendship, the best cure and preservative against all unkind tempers, all angry and haughty passions, but is also of great use to discover to us the true state of our own hearts. There are many tempers which we think lawful and innocent, which we never suspect of any harm, which, if they were to be tried by this devotion, would soon show us how we have deceived ourselves. Susurrus, footnote 44. Susurrus means whisper. Susurrus is a pious, temperate, good man, remarkable for abundance of excellent qualities. No one more constant at the service of the church, or whose heart is more affected with it. His charity is so great that he almost starves himself to be able to give greater alms to the poor. Yet Susurrus had a prodigious failing along with these great virtues. He had a mighty inclination to hear and discover all the defects and infirmities of all about him. You are welcome to tell him anything of anybody, provided that you did not do it in the style of an enemy. He never disliked an evil speaker, but when his language was rough and passionate, if you would but whisper anything gently, though it were ever so bad in itself, Susurrus was ready to receive it. When he visits, you generally hear him relating how sorry he is for the defects and failings of such a neighbor. He is always letting you know how tender he is of the reputation of his neighbor, how loath to say that which he is forced to say, and how gladly he would conceal it, if it could be concealed. Susurrus had such a tender, compassionate manner of relating things the most prejudicial to his neighbor, that he even seemed, both to himself and others, to be exercising a Christian charity, at the same time that he was indulging a whispering, evil-speaking temper. Susurrus once whispered to a particular friend in great secrecy something too bad to be spoken of publicly. He ended with saying how glad he was that it had not yet taken wind, and that he had some hopes it might not be true, though the suspicions were very strong. His friend made him this reply. You say, Susurrus, that you are glad it has not yet taken wind, and that you may have some hopes it may not prove true. Go home, therefore, to your closet and pray to God for this man in such a manner and with such earnestness as you would pray for yourself on the like occasion. Beseech God to interpose in his favor, to save him from false accusers, and bring all those to shame who, by uncharitable whispers and secret stories, wound him like those that stab in the dark. And when you have made this prayer, then you may, if you please, go tell the same secret to some other friend that you have told to me. Susurrus was exceedingly affected with this rebuke, and felt the force of it upon his conscience in as lively a manner, as if he had seen the books opened at the day of judgment. All other arguments might have been resisted, but it was impossible for Susurrus either to reject or to follow this advice, without being equally self-condemned in the highest degree. From that time to this, he has constantly used himself to this method of intercession, and his heart is so entirely changed by it that he can now no more privately whisper anything to the prejudice of another than he can openly pray to God to do people hurt. Whisperings and evil speakings now hurt his ears like oaths and curses, and he has appointed one day in the week to be a day of penance as long as he lives, to humble himself before God in the sorrowful confession of his former guilt. It may well be wondered how a man of so much piety as Susurrus could be so long deceived in himself, as to live in such a state of scandal and evil speaking without suspecting himself to be guilty of it. But it was the tenderness and seeming compassion with which he heard and related everything that deceived both himself and others. This was a falseness of heart, which was only to be fully discovered by the true charity of intercession. And if people of virtue, who think as little harm of themselves as Susurrus did, were often to try their spirit by such an intercession, they would often find themselves to be such as they least of all suspected. I have laid before you the many and great advantages of intercession. You have seen what a divine friendship it must needs beget amongst Christians, how dear it would render all relations and neighbors to one another, how it tends to make clergymen, masters, and parents exemplary and perfect in all the duties of their station, how certainly it destroys all envy, spite, and ill-natured passions, how speedily it reconciles all differences, and with what a piercing light it discovers to a man the true state of his heart. These considerations will, I hope, persuade you to make such intercession as is proper for your state, the constant chief matter of your devotion, at this hour of prayer. Chapter 22. Recommending Devotion at 3 o'clock, called in Scripture the ninth hour of the day. The subject of prayer at this hour is resignation to the divine pleasure, the nature and duty of conformity to the will of God in all our actions and designs. I have recommended certain subjects to be made the fixed and chief matter of your devotions at all the hours of prayer that have been already considered. As thanksgiving and oblation of yourself to God at your first prayers in the morning, at 9, the great virtue of Christian humility is to be the chief part of your petitions. At 12, you are called upon to pray for all the graces of universal love, and to raise it in your heart by such general and particular intercessions as your own state and relation to other people seem more particularly to require of you. At this hour of the afternoon, you are desired to consider the necessity of resignation and conformity to the will of God, and to make this great virtue the principal matter of your prayers. There is nothing wise or holy or just but the great will of God. This is as strictly true in the most rigid sense as to say that nothing is infinite and eternal but God. No beings, therefore, whether in heaven or on earth, can be wise or holy or just, but so far as they conform to this will of God. It is conformity to this will that gives virtue and perfection to the highest services of the angels in heaven, and it is conformity to the same will that makes the ordinary actions of man on earth become an acceptable service unto God. The whole nature of virtue consists in conforming to, and the whole nature of vice in declining from, the will of God. All God's creatures are created to fulfill his will. The sun and moon obey his will. by the necessity of their nature. Angels conform to his will by the perfection of their nature. If therefore you would show yourself not to be a rebel and apostate from the order of the creation, you must act like beings both above and below you. It must be this great desire of your soul that God's will may be done by you on earth as it is done in heaven. It must be the settled purpose and intention of your heart to will nothing, design nothing, do nothing, but so far as you have reason to believe that it is the will of God that you should so desire, design, and do. It is as just and necessary to live in this state of heart, to think thus of God and yourself, as to think that you have any dependence upon him. And it is as great a rebellion against God to think that your will may ever differ from his, as to think that you have not received the power of willing for him. You are therefore to consider yourself as a being that has no other business in the world but to be that which God requires you to be, to have no tempers, no rules of your own, to seek no self-designs or self-ends, but to fill some place and act some part in strict conformity and thankful resignation to the divine pleasure. To think that you are your own or at your own disposal is as absurd as to think that you created and can preserve yourself. It is as plain and necessary a first principle to believe you are thus God's, that you thus belong to him, and are to act and suffer all in a thankful resignation to his pleasure, as to believe that in him you live and move and have your being. Acts 17:28. Resignation to the divine will signifies a cheerful approbation and thankful acceptance of everything that comes from God. It is not enough patiently to submit, but we must thankfully receive and fully approve of everything that by the order of God's providence happens to us. For there is no reason why we should be patient, but what is as good and strong a reason why we should be thankful. If we were under the hands of a wise and good physician that could not mistake or do anything to us but what certainly tended to our benefit, it would not be enough to be patient and abstain from murmurings against such a physician. But it would be as great a breath of duty and gratitude to him not to be pleased and thankful for what he did, as it would be to murmur at him. Now this is our true state with relation to God. We cannot be said so much as to believe in him unless we believe him to be of infinite wisdom. Every argument, therefore, for patience under his disposal of us is as strong an argument for approbation and thankfulness for everything that he does to us, and there needs no more to dispose us to this gratitude towards God than a full belief in him that he is this being of infinite wisdom, love, and goodness. Do but assent to this truth in the same manner as you assent to things of which you have no doubt, and then you will cheerfully approve of everything that God has already approved for you. For as you cannot possibly be pleased with the behavior of any person towards you, but because it is for your good, is wise in itself, and the effect of his love and goodness towards you, so when you are satisfied that God does not only do that which is wise and good and kind, but that which is the effect of an infinite wisdom and love in the care of you, it will be as necessary, whilst you have this faith, to be thankful and pleased with everything which God chooses for you, as to wish your own happiness. Whenever, therefore, you find yourself disposed to uneasiness or murmuring at anything that is the effect of God's providence over us, you must look upon yourself as denying either the wisdom or goodness of God, for every complaint necessarily subsists. You would never complain of your neighbor, but that you suppose you can show either his unwise, unjust, or unkind behavior towards you. Now, every murmuring, impatient reflection under the providence of God is the same accusation of God. A complaint always supposes ill usage. Hence also you may see the great necessity and piety of this thankful state of heart, because the want of it implies an accusation of God's want either of wisdom or goodness in his disposal of us. It is not, therefore, any high degree of perfection founded in any uncommon nicety of thinking or refined notions, but a plain principle founded in this plain belief that God is a being of infinite wisdom and goodness. Now this resignation to the divine will may be considered in two respects. First, as it signifies a thankful approbation of God's general providence over the world. Secondly, as it signifies a thankful acceptance of his particular providence over us. First, every man is, by the law of his creation, by the first article of his creed, obliged to consent to and acknowledge the wisdom and goodness of God in his general providence over the whole world. He is to believe that it is the effect of God's great wisdom and goodness that the world itself was formed at such a particular time and in such a manner that the general order of nature, the whole frame of things, is contrived and formed in the best manner. He is to believe that God's providence over states and kingdoms, times and seasons, is all for the best, that the revolutions of state and changes of empire, the rise and fall of monarchies, persecutions, wars, famines, and plagues are all permitted and conducted by God's providence to the general good of man in this state of trial. A good man is to believe all this with the same fullness of assent as he believes that God is in every place, though he neither sees nor can comprehend the manner of his presence. This is a noble magnificence of thought, a true religious greatness of mind, to be thus affected with God's general providence, admiring and magnifying his wisdom in all things, never murmuring at the course of the world or the state of things, but looking upon all around at heaven and earth as a pleased spectator and adoring that invisible hand which gives laws to all motions and overrules all events to ends suitable to the highest wisdom and goodness. It is very common for people to allow themselves great liberty in finding fault with such things as have only God for their cause. Everyone thinks he may justly say what a wretched, abominable climate he lives in. This man is frequently telling you what a dismal, cursed day it is, and what intolerable seasons we have. Another thinks he has very little to thank God for, that it is hardly worth his while to live in a world so full of changes and revolutions. But these are tempers of great impiety, and show that religion has not yet its seat in the heart of those that have them. It sounds indeed much better to murmur at the course of the world, or the state of things, than to murmur at Providence, to complain of the seasons and weather than to complain of God. But if these have no other cause but God and his Providence, it is a poor distinction to say that you are only angry at the things but not at the cause and director of them. How sacred the whole frame of the world is, how all things are to be considered as God's and referred to him, is fully taught by our blessed Lord in the case of oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. Matthew 5:34-36. That is because the whiteness or blackness of thy hair is not thine, but God's. Here you see all things in the whole order of nature, from the highest heavens to the smallest hair, are always to be considered, not separately as they are in themselves, but as in some relation to God. And if this be good reasoning, thou shalt not swear by the earth, a city, or at thy hair, because these things are God's and in a certain manner belong to him. Is it not exactly the same reasoning to say, thou shalt not murmur at the seasons of the earth, the states of cities, and the change of times, because all these things are in the hands of God, have him for their author, are directed and governed by him to such ends as are most suitable to his wise providence? If you think you can murmur at the state of things without murmuring at Providence, or complain of seasons without complaining of